Good evening, friends and family. It is me, Ryan. I'm here with John Anthony. John, say hi.
Hi, Ryan. Hi, everybody.
How's things going, John? It's been like 3 weeks. Summer's like disappearing before our eyes. How's everything going for you?
It's going well. Just got back from a nice vacation with my family and enjoyed the trip. We had 12 days of driving and vacation.
12 days of driving and vacation.
Went to Florida via Savannah and then came back via Asheville, North Carolina. Okay. And did the Blue Ridge Parkway for 7 hours and then drove 10 hours home. Got home Monday morning at 3:30 in the morning.
3:30 in the morning. Was everybody asleep, the kids and everybody?
At times, you know. My wife drove the last 39 miles of that part, but we took turns, you know. But when both of us driving, it made it a lot easier.
With respect to Monica and Veda, John, can you sleep when your wife's driving? I have a hard time. I think I have a hard time doing it when anybody drives, to be honest with you.
Well, my wife's a good driver. And, you know, but it's nothing like being your own driver, you know. I like to drive. But, yeah. You know, my wife's, we couldn't have done it without her because it was some long hours, you know.
No, I completely get it. I don't know how some people do it. I'm not a huge fan of flying. And I think you and I talked about that on one of our podcasts, but still I like bite my lip, hold my nose, think good thoughts and get on the plane because I just can't see driving the drive when it could be a 2 hour flight. And now I know that, you know, there's COVID and people sometimes that's their preference or for whatever reason they need to drive, but I've heard it's a haul. So I give you all the credit in the world.
Yeah. Well, with the COVID, we didn't want to fly, but yeah. Also we take a lot of stuff with us, you know, beach toys and things.
Yeah.
And it would be difficult to fly with all that. And then you got to rent a car when you're down there anyway. So,
yeah, that's true. People got to factor that in. So I'm glad you enjoyed the vacation. I've been opening a hotel the last 20 days. I think I told you a little bit about that. So lots of use of the tools, just to give you a brief kind of update, insight, and anybody who's listening, all the experience I have, 3 years in New York City in a 700 plus room hotel, 3 New Year's Eves under my belt in New York City, definitely one of the most challenging things I've ever done in my life and career. And it, at times I felt like all my experience and knowledge went out the window, but you know, I had to take a deep breath, utilize the tools, utilize things that you and I talk about. I'm also a big fan of Jocko Willink. I don't know if you've heard of him. He's an ex-Navy SEAL that has turned podcaster, author, and he has a lot of good things to say about leadership and motivation and taking extreme ownership and about, you know, anything we do in life. And one of the things he always says is, you know, if you feel frustrated in a situation, what are you doing to make it better? So, you know, that's one of the things that I had to remember was, even though I felt the pressure at times, it's like, well, am I doing my part? Am I doing what I should be doing, could be doing, among, you know, various other things that you and I talk about and things I've read about and learned. So, yeah, lots of use of the tools.
Yeah, well, it sounds like, you know, same things we teach. You know, you can control yourself, but you can't control others. So you got to see if you're doing your part, and then that's, you do the best that you can, and then you're going to be good.
Yeah. So. Definitely. So that's actually, I think, a good segue. If Richard was here, that's what he would say. Segue leading into the topic. So if you listen to John and I, very rarely do I let John know what we're going to be talking about. And we always have good conversations when we do actually get to what we're talking about. So, John, you may have seen in the intro reel that I did there, tonight's topic, I want to talk about being included, being invited. So tonight's episode is titled Thanks for the Invite. So, without going into too much detail, one of my family members was, let's just say, upset that another family member held an event this past weekend or last week, something of that nature. Without getting into all the details, no harm, no foul, said family member on the other side was upset that they weren't invited. Now here's my thing. First of all, I'm very big on everybody being included. You know, kids being included. I know that if you have a birthday party, you invite the whole classroom. I love it. I'm all about it. The more, the merrier. But then sometimes it's just like it, me personally, I don't let not being invited affect my mood, my mindset, my feelings toward that person. I don't let it, you know, like marinate. I don't let it just sit there and grow. But one of my family members was just upset that they weren't invited. And I talked to them about it. And I was like, would you have gone? No, I wouldn't have gone. But I just feel that I should have been, you know, notified. So that's where I am. Me, I kind of let these things roll off my shoulder. And I was thinking this would be great to talk to you about it, because we always talk about feelings and past wounds. And you know, my mom's great for psychological diagnosis and mental health diagnosis and a bunch of words that I can't even pronounce. But I always like your input on things as far as emotions and past wounds and what we can do in the situation. So not being invited as an adult, from that little bit I told you, what would you say to start it off?
Well, I think that it's kind of funny, ironic funny, because I spent some time at the pool today with my three girls and a neighbor. And, you know, the neighbor was trying to tell secrets to one or two, you know, and she's the age of my twins. So they were trying to exclude the 7-year-old. Mm-hmm. And I was, you know, telling them it's not okay, you know. And when you have two members of a family, it's different than when you have three or more.
Right.
Because it's real easy to pair up, you know, with two. But, you know, when you have three, you know, somebody feels left out. And, you know, in my book on page 32, you know, that chart, obey, disobey. You know, if we only give people commands to obey or disobey, even the best child or the best friend or relative is going to choose to disobey so that they have choices. And so, you know, the thing, you know, that we learn is that when you start with 2-year-olds and you give them choices, you want to wear the blue pants or the red pants, then they're going to put on pants. They get to choose, rather than just telling them, you know, put on your pants, and then they choose to say no because they're trying to have power. Well, that works as we get older too. And so even if I think the person's not going to come, so I give them the option to choose. And then they feel that they were included, but they chose not to come. And it's, you know, it doesn't, when you don't invite somebody, it makes the person vulnerable to having their negative fantasies. Mm-hmm. About yeah. why, you know, that which are caused by our past wounds, you know, as why I didn't, you know, and the fear of what I don't want. And, you know, it's easy for a person to get in there and think, you know, it's something about me, or it's because of that, what happened last holiday. And then they start, you know, going into their thoughts, thinking they know what's going on and why it's going on. And oftentimes we're completely, you know, not on the same track with that. But we think we know, and it can be a very painful situation emotionally for some people. You know, they're sad, they're disappointed, and it bumps into that wound that all of us deal with, you know, whether or not we're lovable. And, you know, we have to know that we're lovable, whether we get invited or not, but not everybody is able to do that.
Right. So, yeah. So two things. The one thing I was thinking when you said something happened at Thanksgiving or something happened at Christmas, it can be a little passive, right? If you're the person where maybe something did happen to you at Christmas or Thanksgiving and you took it personally, or, you know, something like that, and you're like, you know what? I'm just not going to invite this person. I'll say it was an oversight. I forgot to invite them. I got busy. It can be a little passive, right? Sometimes it could be intentional, for sure, right?
Well, you know, sometimes it's, you know, that sounds more like passive aggressive,
yeah.
You know, saying, you know, I was an oversight when really I didn't intend to invite them.
Yeah.
But I'm trying to find an excuse. You know, the best definition of passive aggressive that I ever heard was somebody standing up with a big old dog that's got his paws on your shoulders, licking your face while he's peeing on your leg. You know, that's passive aggressive, you know, doing right. something really nice, but then at the same time doing something that's hurtful or not nice.
Okay. I like that.
And so, but, you know, it's a challenge. You know, families are a challenge. You know, traveling to a distance, you know, we put, you know, like 2,700 miles on the car, you know, yeah, with five people in a van, and you have, you know, people want to eat different places. You know, we didn't eat many places. We took food and ate it on the way, but, you know, wanted this food or that food, or they want to stop now or they don't want to stop now. And so trying to navigate through all that, you know, five different wills, you know, that you're trying to satisfy is what makes family life, you know, so challenging and so enjoyable. And it doesn't get necessarily easier when we get older, because we all want what we want. And sometimes that conflicts with what other people want. And when do you compromise? When do you hold your ground and say, no, I'm sorry, I don't want to go there. All that is things that we have to determine, and you have to do it on the fly most of the time.
Yeah. Yeah, no, I completely agree with that. I mean, and going back to what you said about how it doesn't get easier as we get older, you know, Alexis is 15. She's going to be 16 next week or in 2 weeks. I have no idea where the time went, but I'm sure you could say the same about your family and your kids. But anyway, I digress. She's at the age where lots of things are going on, friend-wise, relationship-wise, family-wise, you know, everything just going on in your head. And one thing I find myself always saying to her is that high school never ends. And that's not to put fear in her mind. What I follow it up with is, you know, things you and I talk about. Like, you're not going to be in control of the situation. If you work at Taco Bell, where she is now, you work in a hotel, you work for a large corporation, you work at a car dealership, whatever. If you work with other people, you don't have any idea what's going on in everybody else's lives. You don't know what they've been through in their lives. And if they display immature behavior, however that may be, you have to be able to navigate it appropriately. So why not work on doing that now? Because it's not going to get any better once you get that diploma. What do you think about that? Because what you said about how it just doesn't get easier.
Well, I think the younger we are when we learn to cope with these things, the more advantages we have, because it's not going to be new to us. We can make our mistakes as a young person, and everybody's making mistakes at that young age. But when we don't get exposed to things, you know, like disappointment until we're adults, then it's more embarrassing because we haven't learned how to handle it. And, you know, I was just listening to something on NPR. I think the book was called Dopamine Nation.
I heard of that, yeah.
And she was talking about how, you know, we develop these coping skills as children, and then they become a part of our brain thinking. And then, you know, we take them into our adult years. And what I've learned is that we develop these things as children when we only have the mentality of a child, and our brain is not developed enough to give ourselves, are you a cat? You know, that respect, understanding, acceptance, caring, appreciation, and trust, the love I have to give to myself and give to others. And so we develop these childlike coping skills, and then we keep using them in our adult years because it's what the pattern of our brain waves, you know, our thinking, is, you know, created. And we can improve on it, but we don't know that we can. So we just keep using what we thought of with the mentality of a 5-year-old or a 12-year-old, you know, and depending on what ages we were when we had traumas. And you know, we need to understand that and try to heal those traumas and come up with a healthier way to respond to our fears and our shames and our disappointments, which are, you know, all forms of emotional pain.
That, you just made me think of something. So when we talk about, you know, we talk about sports, keeping our kids in sports or involved in extracurriculars, because friendly reminder to all of our listeners and parents and people who will be parents. Not every kid is the same. Some kids might be interested in Legos, while others are interested in soccer, football, video games, right? So not everybody's going to be interested in the same thing. But when we say extracurriculars, especially sports, we often say, you know, we're teaching our kids to be coachable, to listen, to follow a regiment, to be prepared to be employees or prepared to run, I don't know, a platoon in the army, right? Whatever the case may be. A lot of people feel that it starts with sports. We're preparing them for something in the future that they have to deal with, namely work or, you know, structure and things like that. But I'm just thinking to myself now as I say all this, and you said it, we kind of miss the emotional point sometimes, right? The socializing point, right? And that's what I think I'm saying when I say that I tell Alexis, you know, high school never ends. I just say it that way. Work on dealing with things now. Work on dealing with different personalities now. Learn to control what you can control, which is yourself. And if the situation is volatile, perhaps walk away if you can't do anything about it, right? That piece can get missed with our youth. What do you think? That's what I think right now that we say it out loud.
Well, I think it gets missed by our society, by our cultures. you know, we're very good at teaching people that they have to become financially independent. You know, they have to rely on themselves to make their own money, to pay their own bills, you know, that they can't be relying on somebody else, whether it's another person or the family, you know, or the government or, you know, and, you know, we've done a very good job of doing that. And, you know, since the 50s, we've done a good job of teaching that to women too, that they, you know, because, you know, back in the 50s and earlier, we taught women that the thing was to get married, and then they have to be reliant on a man to, you know, or their partner, you know, to support them. And then they don't have the freedom, if things aren't going well, to say, you know what, I don't like how I'm being treated. And if I continue to get treated this way, I'm just going to leave, you know, so they feel stuck and they don't feel empowered. So we've done really good at, you know, teaching men, you know, all that time to be financially independent, and we're teaching women to do the same thing, but we don't teach people to be emotionally independent and to see that just like we have to earn that dollar for ourselves, we have to give that love to ourselves and not be reliant on getting it from other people only. And as I talk about in the book, when we give that, are you a cat, that love to ourselves, it's like cooking the meal where I'm providing the meat and potatoes. When I'm getting love from other people, all they can give me is gravy. So when I cook the meat and potatoes and they give me gravy, I've got a really tasty meal. But if I'm not cooking the meat and potatoes, I can have all of the gravy in the world, and it's not going to be nutritious enough to sustain me. So in other words, I can have every person in the world that loves me, but if I don't love me, I'm not going to believe them. I'm not going to think it's valid, and it's not going to feel fulfilling. You know, we have to be able to respect ourselves and understand and accept ourselves, to care, appreciate, and trust ourselves. If we get it from others, great. But when I'm giving it to myself, even if I don't get it from others, I'm still good. You know, I've got a good, you know, meat and potato meal, you know, because I'm able to be my source of love. And we don't teach that to people enough, you know, that you have to be emotionally independent. You know, when I grew up, you know, it was like find that partner to get love in your life. And if you don't have that partner, you know, you're going to miss out on love. Like they're our only source of love, when really our love from ourselves to ourselves is a bigger and more important source. So,
yeah. And I'm thinking to myself, you know, the other day, Alexis, we were talking about how her birthday's coming up. She wants to do something, which is fine. We want to do something nice for her. It's her sweet 16. And she's like, oh, well, it won't be a big deal because I don't have any friends. And I was like, that's not true. You have two or three very good friends, and you know a lot of people, right? You know, sometimes I'm just worried that she's striving to have this huge pool of friends. You know what I mean? Like, she just has so many friends she doesn't know what to do with. She's connecting with so many people on so many different levels. And sometimes I have difficulty understanding that. And I'll be very honest. I have difficulty understanding that because I was never really that person, right? I love talking to people. I love talking, obviously, because I have three podcasts. I love learning about people. I love knowing where they've been, where they're thinking about going. I love listening to their problems, maybe helping them through that. But I'm never looking for much more, right? Even when I was younger, I didn't need to have a ton of friends. It never bugged me. Monica, on the other hand, had a huge group of friends. She had the neighborhood friends. She's still friends with them to this day. You know what I mean? That's their pack. That's their unit. And, you know, sometimes Monica will be like, well, you know, this is how she's feeling. This is what's going on. And I have a hard time sympathizing, right? It's not that I don't care. It's just that I can't really, it doesn't click. Does that make sense?
Yeah. Well, you're not able to relate to it because it's not your experience. But see, I think that as parents and as Martians, we can make very subtle mistakes, you know, and the first thing, and I know as a parent, you know, I've done this with my kids, where I want to fix their pain. So I say, you've got lots of friends. What are you talking about? Just like what you're saying. See, and what happens is that when we come in with our fix, we don't get to listen to our children as to why they think they don't have any friends. And if I'm not doing something where I'm listening to them, I'm not going to understand them. I'm trying to get them to understand me and to see it the way I see it. And then that's how we can sometimes alienate our children, because they just say, you don't understand. You know, because when they think that they don't have any friends and you're telling them it's not so, that's a power struggle. And they're not going to see that you're right, because they already believe that they're right. So the key when we can do it, and I fall into the same trap myself, so I'm not trying to point fingers.
Yeah.
The key is to ask them, so why do you think you don't have friends? Excuse me. What's going on that you would think you don't? See, now what they're doing when they start to answer that question, if they're willing to go there, is that they're telling us what they're thinking. And when they're telling us what they're thinking, we can see how that's causing their feelings, their attitude, and their experience, you know, in the thoughts, feelings, attitude, experience diagram in the book. And when I can get a person to see how it's their thinking that's causing their feelings to begin with, and that if they change their thinking, they can change their feelings, see, then it's easier to assist them to process through the situation. But if I just try to, you know, because I show them the connection of their thoughts to their feelings and to their attitude and to their experience. But if I just give them a new thought and say, no, you have to think about it this way, well, that obey, disobey, you know, it's not a choice. It's just they got to obey or disobey. And we all want to have power in our life. And so it's just easier for them to just not do what we're asking. And then they feel like we don't understand and we're not accepting them. And then we're not respecting them or really caring or appreciating or trusting them. And then that's how they feel, that they're not getting the love that they need or want, even though we think we're giving them love. See, and in John Gray's book, Men Are From Mars, Women Are From Venus, the whole, you know, one of the premises that he talks about is that Martians need love a certain way and Venusians need love a certain way. And when I give you the love that I would want as a Martian, and I'm giving it to a Venusian, it doesn't mean she's going to feel loved, because she's wanting the love that a Venusian, you know, gives and feels and wants, mm-hmm. not the Martian, you know. And so we have to be careful of making sure that we're giving the person the love that they're wanting and not the love that I would want.
Yeah, no.
And we do that by listening to what they're thinking, and then we can see where they're getting off track, and then we can help them to see what they would need to do to get themselves back in a loving frame of mind. And then they can either choose to do it or choose not to do it, but it's their choice. And so they can't be stuck in the second dimension blaming whoever they're blaming for why they're feeling what they're feeling. It's because of how I'm responding to those other people or situations.
Yeah. And I'm thinking to myself, what I was trying to figure out what to say when I was, you know, I drew that blank, and luckily, or thank you for stepping in there. It's one of the things I think about is when it comes to the kids and teenagers and teaching them to be independent. What do you think? Is there a way to go about it? Is it the apple in the tree, meaning that they're visually, you know, they see what we're doing, they hear what we're saying, are they taking it all in? It's not any one thing, is it? Do I put them in karate so they gain confidence? It's just, I always, you know, struggle with this, like, and I guess it just varies by household and what everybody else is going through. One thing I'm big on, though, and I'm not telling anybody how to parent, so please don't take it that way. But one thing I try to be really mindful of with my kids now, you know, Alexis is older, and I've always say this, she's seen me at my worst, she's seen me at my best. Now I have Jade, who's 3, the boys are 1, they see me, but I'm a much more put together individual, right? Emotionally, physically, I'm much more in control of my emotions and my day to day.
Mentally, you've matured too.
Yes, mentally, right? From 16 to 32, I've matured. So I'm mindful about how I act in front of them, right? Because I see Alexis, and she has said to me, like, oh, you're just, this is what you do, right? It's like, because she's been there, right? She knows me, she's seen me progress. And when I'm doing well and she sees me shake something off or react to something in an appropriate manner, she'll be like, whoa, somebody's taking a turn for the best, right? So she sees me at my best, she sees me at my worst. I'm going off on a tangent here. The point I'm trying to make is that I always feel like that's something that parents, again, nobody kill me. I just need to say it. Parents, sometimes we as parents don't think about what we're doing right then and there, right? I had a bad day. Can you just go to your room, please? Like, the kid's going to feel that, you know what I mean? Or arguing in front of the child, right? They're going to feel that. They're going to see that. That might be how they, okay, well, this is how I react as an adult, right? Or as a person, as an individual. If somebody says something I don't like, that's how I react. And I think that's something that gets missed and people don't think about it. I said a lot there. I apologize. But that's what I meant to say, is that our kids are learning from us all the time. And I think we don't pay attention to that as parents enough.
Yeah, well, they're constantly, we're teaching them constantly. We're either teaching them the things to do or the things not to do. But we're constantly teaching our children, and they're learning from us.
Yeah.
And it's a 24/7 situation. And it's hard to be on point 24/7
for
any of
right?
us, because we have things, you know, that are going on, and we get tired, and we get, you know, demands from our work that take mm-hmm. us away from the family. And, you know, but, you know, when I went through some programs with Landmark Education years ago, one of the things that they taught in this thing called the Forum is that no matter what you do as a parent, somehow, some way, you're going to do something that your child is going to consider that you're screwing up their life. Because you're not going to give them everything they want, the way that they want it, when they want it, you know, how they want it. Because sometimes kids want inappropriate things.
Yeah.
You know, they want to do things that they're really not mature enough to handle. And they want to, you know, eat cookies and ice cream all day, several days in a week. Some, you know, and so you're going to do things, whether it's subtle things, you know, like say, no, you can't have, you know, that many cookies or something, you know, or no, you got to go to this school. And, you know, and the child has its own script or agenda as to what they want from us. And it's, you know, doesn't coincide with what the parent's agenda is of what they think they should give the child. And, you know, and trying to, alluding back to some, what you were talking about before, you know, parenting, there's different ways that people parent. And some people plan things out, you know, and they just have, you know, things to do, tasks and everything. And other people go in the moment and just see what comes up in the moment. And I remember one time, you know, someone showing me that when you plan your day to the minute, that is going to be the best that your day is going to be. And when you don't get to meet your plan, we can be disappointed. And if we had that positive fantasy that we turn into an expectation and it doesn't get met, we can actually be devastated. But when we're going with the flow, then I can go with where things are taking me, you know, what the moment is, and just go with it. And then I'm not disappointed because I thought I was supposed to turn right here. I just decided at the last minute that I'm going to turn left. And then all these other things open up for me. You know, I when I was younger, I spent 3 months traveling around the country out west in a car. I put 15,000 miles on the car. And I had certain places I want to get to, but I just was able to stay in the moment. And when I met people, I'd interact with them and stay some there, stay a week here, you know, stay 3 days there and then move on. And it was a very fun time. And I got to see a lot of the country. And, you know, and because I didn't have a plan or expectation, I wasn't disappointed. And I just was able to enjoy what was going on. And if I wasn't enjoying what was going on, I would change what I was doing to move it in a direction that looked like that would be more enjoyable. And that's another style of parenting. And I'm not saying that one is better than the other, but we have to, you know, pick what works for us and then do the best that we can. And when you get down to it, parenting is, you know, flying by the seat of your pants in a lot of situations. And you just have to learn how to deal with incidents and traumas that come up the best you can and just hope for the best.
Yeah, no, I completely agree with everything you're saying. And one thing that I think about all the time, and it actually would be my number one piece of advice for parents or grandparents, aunts and uncles, any family member who's taking the family or the children or the child to Disney World, because I'm thinking about what you said about planning everything to the minute. When we went to Disney World a couple years back, the first day, Monica was very stressed. I could see it on her face. We had a reservation for Jay's birthday somewhere. We got there. It's, do we do things before the reservation? Oh, it's, well, we're going to miss the reservation. We're going to, well, we got to figure it out. You know what I mean? Like, and it was then and there that I realized she just wants it to be perfect for the entire family, right? She wants to be perfect for Jade. She wants to be perfect for Alexis. People are spending a lot of money, right? In general, when you go to Disney World, it's probably well thought out, financed, perhaps over an extended period of time or whatever the case may be. And you want it to be right, right? With any vacation. But when I realized that, and I'm glad I realized it the first day, and I pulled her aside and we had a quick chat, and I just said, like, listen, relax. Like, I know where your mind's at. You want it to be perfect. You want everybody to have a good time. But you're stressing yourself out. You know what I mean? And so my one piece of advice to anybody going to Disney World, taking the kids to Disney World, the kid to Disney World, just leave the expectations at the airport, check in, build a plan of where you want to go for the theme parks, right? Because we can't go to three theme parks in one day, but leave it at that. You know what I mean? Just don't put that kind of pressure on yourself. It's not going to be enjoyable at Disney World or in life if you put that kind of pressure on yourself.
Well, see, it comes back to doing things from our fear or doing things from our love. And when I'm doing things from my fear, I'm afraid I'm not going to get everything done. I'm afraid it's not going to be perfect. And we are stressed and we're doing things coming from our fear. And we make it hard to enjoy what we are doing. When we come from our love, it's like, well, whatever I pick, it's going to be fine. You know, we'll do it until we want to change something else. See, and then we're going with the flow. And then we can just enjoy moment to moment. And finding that balance, you know, one of the challenges when I travel with Veta, my wife, is that she is wanting to see, you know, 24 hours of things in a 17-hour period, you know. And I'm all for seeing as much as we can. But, you know, I am also for enjoying the pace as you're going through it. And you get done what you get done. And if you don't, then there's next time. But she's, you know, just afraid she's going to miss things. And she wants to see everything. And, you know, when we used to lay over in Europe, when we went to visit her folks, we'd have a 17-hour layover in a city, you know, like Paris or Frankfurt or Prague or Rome, Frankfurt, you know, and trying to see everything in that city in that 17-hour period, you know. And so she didn't want to spend any time in restaurants. She didn't want to spend very much time reading. I mean, sleeping, you know, because she wanted to just see everything. And it was like, hey, you know, this is a tough pace. You know, and but you try to, you know, be respectful to each other and, you know, voice your concerns and you know, and your ideas. And, you know, since the kids have come along, it's balanced things out because they're the ones who kind of say, I've had it, you know, I can't keep going, you know, and they show you that because they're tired and then they get cranky or they get hungry and they get irritable. And so that's made things, you know, more in moderation when we do things, because they're the ones who, they're the squeaking wheels, so to speak, that need to be greased.
Right.
And when it's just me squeaking, you know, then I'm just, you know, I'm not tough enough, you know.
Oh, no, I know exactly what you mean. And I know the kids, they dictate the pace, which is, it's fine. It's the way it is. And I guess that's the way it's always going to be until the grandkids come along and we get to say, haha, you see why it wasn't always so easy carting everybody around. But, so we're reaching the 40-minute mark. So with the next 20 minutes, why don't we jump ahead? So I didn't get the invite, right? And first of all, great conversation. Thank you. We're having a great conversation, as we always do. We got to talk about kids and parenting and teenagers and things that we can work on or be aware of. So now at the last 20 minutes, we're jumping ahead. I didn't get the invite. My aunt didn't invite me. My cousin didn't invite me. I wouldn't have gone. It wasn't like a birthday or something. It was just a small pop-up party. I wasn't invited. I wasn't told about it. My question to you, as somebody who works with people day in and day out on their emotions and their past wounds and building, I'm going to say a tolerance. For some reason, that's the first word that comes to mind. But using the tools to be able to handle things on a daily basis, what would you tell somebody to be aware of if the negative emotions arise, like I wasn't invited or I wouldn't have gone anyway, but somebody should invite me? What should I start thinking about if this is how I'm feeling? Should I try to think back to, did I do something wrong? Does it go further back to childhood? Perhaps I wasn't involved or I wasn't heard. What do you think comes to mind?
Well, there are several things, but sometimes what's happening is that a past wound is getting bumped into. And so it would be helpful if I asked myself, what does this remind me of from my past? And it's helpful sometimes to go back to your earliest memory of what this reminds you of. Because a lot of times, you know, like being abandoned, you know, if you felt abandoned about something as a child, then when people do something that's abandoning as an adult, it's going to bump into that wound. And so then when you go through the four dimensions of emotional healing, you see that it's not going to always be that way. I'm not going to be abandoned all the time. There was a cause and an effect as to why I was abandoned in that situation. And then feel the feelings before the anger, the fears, the shames, the sadnesses, the disappointments. Give myself the "Are you a cat?" that I'm blaming somebody else for not giving me when they didn't include me or they abandoned me. And then once I have that love from me to me, I'm able to forgive the person I'm blaming for not loving me when they did what they did or they didn't do what I wanted them to do. And it's going to be easier for me to forgive myself for anything that I may have done to bring it about. See, then I'm helping to heal that emotional wound. But it's so easy for us to get stuck in the second dimension, blaming others for my pain, when really what's causing my pain is what I'm thinking about what's being done or not done. That is what really causes my pain. And if we look at that and take responsibility for that, then we can do what we need to do to alleviate our emotional pain. But if we don't, then, you know, and that would be being in the third dimension and take responsibility for my part. But if we don't, then we're going to be blaming other people. And then they have to change in order for my life to change instead of, you know, me changing how I see it. And, you know, people's feelings, you know, end up, you know, they're saying, you know, or hurt. And, but really, I'm letting you hurt my feelings. And people don't see that, you know. And, you know, my kids were playing today, and the friend of theirs said, "Everybody, you know, if you're going to sit together when we go to a certain class or whatever, put your hand on your shoulder." And then, you know, my one daughter did and the other one didn't. And then the girl was joking and kidding, but serious. "Oh, you didn't put your hand up. You don't want to sit with me. Oh, I'm crushed. You know, you don't want to be with me." Well, you know, there's a little joking in that, you know, she was playing. But sometimes there's seriousness in that. And we really think that if you don't choose me, then, you know, I must not be good enough. And that's the thing, is that sense of knowing that I'm lovable is something that we all have to learn to conquer so that we know that we are lovable. But when we've had traumas that have happened to us, it makes it harder for us to believe that. So, you know, going about it that way, you know, to see what I'm feeling, what I'm thinking about, what happened, see, then I'm owning how I'm responding to the fact that I wasn't invited, instead of stuck in the second dimension, blaming them for why I'm feeling what I'm feeling about the fact that I wasn't invited.
Yeah, I was I'm thinking about so many things when it comes to this. So let's say that I'm not invited. Do I ask this person why I wasn't invited? Do I wait a day? Do I say, like, "Hey, you know, I didn't know that you were getting..." I mean, like I said, it's something where, and this is where I struggle with things, because Monica, I think she'll openly admit to you that she has FOMO, fear of missing out, right? And she and I love her, and if she's listening, sometimes she might be that person that just, you know, says, like, "Oh, thanks for the invite," right? And again, it's not like it was anything crazy or whatever. Me, like, I love you either way. If I did something, I'm sorry. I don't think I did. maybe I'm thinking of, like, it doesn't bug me. Like, what would you say to somebody who is feeling this way and would like some sort of closure? I mean, the first thing I'm thinking is you might say, or I might say, use what you said about think back to the what did you say? The earliest memory?
Uh-huh.
Yeah, think back to the earliest memory. Did I?
The situation reminds me of, you know, like, yeah, when's the first time I felt abandoned?
Okay, yeah. So do something like that. Like, did I say something last time I saw them? Did I offend them in some sort of way? You know, I don't know. But what would you do? Like, do I narrow it down? Do I reach out for closure? What would you say to do?
Well, I wouldn't say to do one or the other. I would say do what you think you need to do.
Mm-hmm.
But just be aware that oftentimes we're looking for that "Are you a cat?" to come from others.
Mm-hmm.
And when it doesn't, we feel devastated. Well, the only way I really feel devastated is when I'm not giving any of that "Are you a cat?" to myself. So, you know, the absence of love, which "Are you a cat?" is fear. So if I'm not giving love to myself, then I'm in my fear as it relates to myself. And if I believe or think that somebody else isn't giving me that love, then that's going to be fear. And I can't make somebody else love me, but I can make sure that I'm loving me. And if I turn my love light on, so to speak, by giving myself that "Are you a cat?", I'm sitting in a lighted room. And whether the other person, you know, tempted to bring light to that room or not, you know, I'm sitting in a lighted room. But if I'm not doing it for myself and the other person doesn't, then I'm sitting in a dark room with no light, and that's scary.
And
it means no love.
Because it means no love. And you just made me think about something, and maybe this is why I'm able to do so after working with you all these years and being able to give myself "Are you a cat?" and, you know, other things that I've done to work on myself. I always say to people, and I really mean this, if you're listening, please don't test me because it's not very nice. But I always say to anybody, if you don't hurt my family, you don't hurt my kids, you don't insult them verbally, you don't hurt people, right? You don't hurt children, you don't hurt animals. For the most part, I will be able to forgive whatever sort of verbal or physical altercation we had, like, right away, right? And I feel that I'm very good at giving myself "Are you a cat?" And maybe that's part of it. And I mean that, like, even at work, we have a disagreement. Somebody sees me 30 minutes later, an hour later, "Hey, I just want to let you know I'm like, yeah, no problem. You know, like, we all have bad days, or here's what happened. I get it. Like, emotions were here. It's fine. I'm already over it." But, like, I mean that. So maybe that's something that anyone who's listening can think about, that what you say and what we always say is if you're really able to give yourself "Are you a cat?" and you're able to, if you're really able to give yourself "Are you a cat?", you may find that you feel that much better about things such as not being invited. What do you think? I mean, like I said, like, I maybe that's what it is that I've been working with you for so long and I've, you know, used the tools that is just second nature, where I'm just like, yeah, you know, I'm fine, I'm happy, life's good.
Like, well, I'm good. I think the extent to which we can give ourselves "Are you a cat?" is important for our ability to process through something like that. But you see, sometimes in situations, there's built-in expectations. And when it comes to family, it's like, hey, we're family. We're supposed to do things together. You know, it's supposed to be fair for everybody. And, you know, I know for myself, you know, after my dad died, there was some misunderstanding between me and some family members, and then there was a Zoom meeting that was, you know, created by, you know, the family, And then when it ended up happening without me being included, I was disappointed, but I had to, you know, work through it, and I chose to work through it and see that it was just something that happened. And when we make it be about me, that's being done to me, that's when we feel even more hurt. And, you know, it's easy to love lovable people. The hard challenge is to love people when they're not being lovable. And if I can love people, even when they're not lovable, you know, or doing loving things, I'm going to have more love in my life than not. But if I allow what other people do cause me to not have love in my life for them or for myself, then I am going to be depriving myself of that love. And so if you do something that hurts my family, you know, I'm going to do what I need to do to make sure that they're safe. And I can just, you know, turn it to fear and anger and want to hurt them back, because hurt people hurt people. Or I can say, wow, somebody must have really been hurting, something really fearful of losing or not getting something, for them to choose to do something like that. See, now I'm giving them understanding and acceptance, and I'm making it be about them and not about me. And so even though what they did may not have been a loving thing, I can still be loving as the way I see it and look at it. So then when I see that, then I'm empowered to have love in my life whenever I want it, for whoever I want it. Not where it's unconditional or leaning towards the spectrum of unconditional, as opposed to conditional. Well, if you're not going to do this, then I'm not going to do that, because that's what we do with our hurt a lot of times, is we try to hurt who we're blaming for our hurt, when really it's what I'm thinking about what happened. That's why I'm hurting. It's not what they did, because I don't have to hurt because of something you did if I don't want to. See, and then the other thing that it goes along here is that we have an incident that happens that has a certain degree of emotional pain, but there are other components that add to that emotional pain. One of them is what I think about me, given that this happened. Another thing is what I think about that other person, you know, what they think about me, you know, given that it happened. And then the pain of what I think other people are thinking about me because that happened. So what happened in the incident is something that happened. I can't control that. But what I think about me, what I think the other person's thinking about me, and what I think other people are thinking about me, all those things are occurring in my head, in my thoughts. And I can be responsible for all of that, to maximize the love or to maximize the fear. It's my choice. And when I see that, then I'm going to be less overwhelmed by things than not.
Yeah. One thing I was thinking about when you said, or when we were talking, you just said it, and I forget what you said, I'm sorry, but it made me think about how we can kind of change the outcome if we have perspective and understanding. You know what I mean? Like, we can, for example, one thing I always think about with if you're talking to somebody, whether it be about sports, a TV show, whether you're talking at work, and you give your opinion, or they give their opinion rather, and then you respond, and they feel the need to defend their point so desperately, and you're kind of like, whoa, like, why are you getting so defensive here? I'm just giving my opinion, right? What I think as far as perspective in a situation like that is, this person may have been told to be quiet when they were a child, right? Mom and dad or aunt and uncle or whoever may have just dismissed them, right? They didn't really take in what they said. they were kind of just like, oh, you don't know what you're talking about, right? Maybe they put them down. And I'm not saying that's every situation, but that's the mindset I try to keep if somebody's defensive like that, right? And that's just one example. But what I'm trying to say is that being confident and giving myself, are you a cat, and keeping that open mind and perspective, and like you said, hurt people, or, you know, hurt people, get defensive, whatever, the way they react, that's a result of something else, right? Nobody's born that way. They might be. I don't know. I haven't done any studies about it, but, you know, I'm sure maybe you can speak to this. Often it's a result of something, like we keep saying. So that's why I try to keep that open mind and perspective in anything, but, you know, namely when people get upset about things.
Well, you know, when a baby is born, if you feed it physically, you know, and you nurture it, you know, and you know, there's physical feeding, you know, like proper diet, you know, healthy foods. And then there's emotional feeding, you know, and intellectual feeding, you know, and then spiritual feeding. And so when a baby has gotten all the nutrients it needs physically, intellectually, emotionally, and spiritually, it's going to grow up and be better able to be all that it can be, and it doesn't even have to join the army. You know, remember that old commercial, be all that you can be, you know, join the army. So if we grow up and we're getting all of that, we are going to thrive. And, you know, love plays a big role in that thriving. But incidents happen, traumas happen, people die. Trauma happens to people where those things get stunted. And that's what makes things challenging. And I can look at you and see your physical wounds, but I can't look at you and see your emotional wounds. And the same thing for me. You can't see my emotional wounds, and you may be able to see the physical wounds that I've, you know, incurred in my life. But, excuse me, because we can't see them, we can often bump into them and we don't even realize that we've done it. You know, like I can sit here and tell you all these things about my father and how I love my father and this and that. But if somebody just lost their father, or somebody had a bad relationship with their father, it's not going to impact them the same way that I'm intending when I'm talking about, you know, what I'm bringing up. And so just that subtly, we could be causing someone else to be feeling pain, you know, and it's not so much that we're causing it, it's that we're creating a situation that they, because of their wound, are thinking about it in a way that's painful. And it's just that easily that hurt can be brought into a relationship or a room of people, you know, just that quickly and easily. And, you know, we don't, sometimes people intend to do hurtful things. Mm-hmm. Sometimes people inadvertently end up being hurtful.
Yeah, I know exactly what you mean. And what I'm thinking about it is, it's, what was I going to say? In regards to what you said, it's just an example for anybody to keep in mind. We were talking about, and I'm taking extreme ownership to anyone who's listening. We were talking months ago about COVID and the pandemic, and you know, not dismissing it, not saying it wasn't real, but, you know, there was frustration. This was prior to this was like when everything was shutting down again, right? They were closing restaurants again before the holidays, and, you know, people needed money and all this. And I can't remember exactly what I said, but I said something about COVID, kind of dismissing the severity, and I'm taking ownership. It was not the right thing to say. It was, you know, a stressful time, I think, for everybody. And just what I was saying came out wrong. And I look over my shoulder, and one of my coworkers, I just see him, like, he just looked so upset. He looked angry. And then I was like, why is he? And I was like, his dad passed away of COVID, and I completely forgot, right? And I'm taking ownership. I shouldn't have been saying what I was saying, ranting the way I was, but it affected him in a certain way. And he didn't get angry. He didn't start flipping it, but it was on his face. You know what I mean? And I was like, oh, You know what I mean? Like, it's just, we don't realize sometimes that even though we're comfortable saying what we're saying, there's somebody around us where they may be offended by it. You know, people say like, oh, everybody's soft these days and this and that. Like, people have reasons for feeling the way they feel, and we need to keep an open mindset about that, I think.
Well, yeah, and I'm a proponent of soft, because soft is sensitive, and it lets us know what's, in a more subtle way, you know, what's not working or what is working. And when we're hard, we aren't able to see when we're doing hurtful things to ourselves or to others. You know, the analogy that I use is when you have a submarine that's going along underwater, and the guy says, "Captain, sonar reports a huge obstacle ahead." And the captain says, "Well, turn off the sonar." Well, it's silly, right? Because the whole purpose of the sonar is to make you aware of the obstacle so that you can navigate around the obstacle without colliding. Well, guess what our sonar is? Our feelings. Our feelings are letting us know when our thinking is getting off track. And if our way of trying to cope with our hurtful feelings is to shut down our ability to identify our feelings, then what we are literally doing is turning off our sonar. And then we're going to be navigating under the water, so to speak, without ability to see what's ahead. And then next thing you know, we crash into something. And then all of a sudden, what was that? How did that happen? Whereas when you have the sonar on, you're starting to feel, this is getting a little uncomfortable. I don't think I should be going here. Right. Or I'm not going to stay here and let myself be talked to this way. And then we navigate around that situation without crashing. So that softness allows me to be aware in a very subtle way that I need to adjust my thinking. I need to adjust my course. And so that softness can be beneficial, and that hardness can be fatal when I'm heading for a really big, painful situation and I don't recognize it until I've crashed into it.
I think that that is a great analogy. I honestly do. I think that that's probably where we should start getting towards the end of things, because that was perfect. And sonar, right? The boundary, we always talk about boundaries, setting that boundary for yourself. And it doesn't mean that you need to be like, I'm not going to be talked to this way. It could be, I'm not going to be talked to this way. I'm going to step away. Maybe we can discuss a little bit later when you're calmed down and things have calmed down, right? It doesn't need to become an argument, because it's contagious and it's just going to completely go sideways and everything's going to be misconstrued. But I really like that. So I think we're going to start heading to the end of this episode. I really hope everybody got something out of it. I am very proud of this episode, as I often am when John Anthony and I do episodes together. So John, why don't you give everybody your information? If you like what you're hearing from John Anthony, there's other ways you can work on the tools and develop the tools with John. John, why don't you give me your info?
Well, before I do that, sure. I agree with you that it would be great if other people got something out of it. But I think there's one thing that we can say for certain. You and I got something out of this. And if nothing else is gotten out of that, that's going to be okay for you and I. And I think that there are other people that could have gotten something out of what we're saying too. And if they do, great. And if they don't, well, it's not because we didn't try. So, you know, I can be reached at, you know, email. It's contact@supportivealliance.com. And then our website is www.supportivealliance.com. And that's how I can be reached. And you can find out more about what we do. And I appreciate the opportunity to have a conversation with you about these things. And so,
let's see, we got a comment. Marissa, my good friend Marissa, she's always listening when you're on, and she's a big supporter of these episodes. She's been on herself, so Marissa, glad you enjoyed it. Very glad you enjoyed it. And John, thank you for joining me. We will definitely do it again soon. And yes, it is always a pleasure, and I enjoy these conversations that we have.
Yep. Good to be back.
Thank you, John. Good to have you back. Everybody else, we'll see you next time. Take care.